All right, calling the meeting to order. Our first orders of business are in closed session, so we'll be, in a moment, I'll be asking for a mover and seconder to move into closed session. I'd first ask if there are any disclosures of pecuniary interest on any of the matters we'd be moving into camera on. Deputy Mayor Minnelli?
Aye.
If you could use your mic.
I'd like to declare pecuniary interest on B2.
Okay.
Because of a family member that works for the board.
Thank you. Councillor Delgatty?
Same here on A2, conflict of interest, MRPC board members.
Okay, thank you. So we'll be moving into camera to deal with the first three items that are listed in the agenda. So B1, to stop up and close a portion of Old Perth Road, B2, regarding MRPC board members, and B3, regarding 28 Mill Street in Almont. The fourth item will be going into camera just before the conclusion of our meeting to deal with that item. So I'm looking for a mover and seconder to go into camera for those first three items at this time. Councillor Ferguson? Councillor Delgatty? All in favor? Thank you. We're in closed session. Good evening, everyone. I'm calling the meeting back to order. We started with a closed session, and we dealt with items B1 and B2 from the agenda. B1 was to stop up and close a portion of Old Perth Road. So this is regarding a proposed or pending acquisition or disposition of land for municipal purposes. And item B2, regarding MRPC board members, which is a personal matter about an identifiable individual, including municipal or local board employees. And items B3 and B4, we will be going into camera to discuss just before the end of our meeting tonight. So regarding item B1, there is a motion coming out of camera. And that recommendation reads that council authorize staff to proceed with the necessary steps to stop up and close a portion of the municipal road allowance known as Old Perth Road between lots 10 and 11, concession 3, Ramsey Ward, Municipality of Mississippi Mills, on the understanding that all costs associated with the stop up and close, i.e. appraisal, survey, land transfer tax, land costs, are paid for by the purchaser. And that council authorize staff to proceed with the request to the owner to convey at no cost to the Municipality of Mississippi Mills the lands required for the full extent of the right-of-way along the existing alignment of Old Perth Road. I'm looking for a mover and seconder for this motion. Councillor Ferguson, Councillor Holmes, any further discussion? All in favor? Thank you, that carries. In item A2, this is regarding the MRPC board members, and there were statements of interest by two members of council before we moved into closed session. They need to make the statements again, or? Okay. And out of this discussion in camera, there is a motion coming out of camera as well. Just waiting for it to come back up on the screen. So that motion out of camera is that council denies the request to extend the terms of the two directors of the Board of Directors of Mississippi River Power Corporation, whose terms expire December 31st, 2020, and that council directs staff to implement the outline process to select two new board members for the Mississippi River Power Corporation. So I'm looking for a mover and seconder for this. Councillor Holmes, and a seconder? Sorry, it's Councillor Jarrod? Okay, any further discussion? All those in favor of the motion? Thank you, that carries. And that brings us to O Canada. And I would invite you to remain standing for a moment of silence at the conclusion of O Canada. Remembrance Day is next Wednesday, November 11th, and I invite you to remember all those who have served our country.
Thank you.
Thank you. Attendance, Madam Clerk.
All members of council present.
Thank you. Approval of the agenda. Mover and seconder for the approval of the agenda. Councillor Baden, Councillor Ferguson. All in favor? Thank you. And disclosure of pecuniary interest and general nature thereof. There were two disclosures ahead of our closed session. If there are any other items, you can maybe bring those up at this time or when they arrive on the agenda. On pages 4 to 11, we have our minutes from the meeting October 20th. I'm looking for a mover and seconder to move the minutes. Thank you, Councillor Maiden. Councillor Ferguson. Anything arising from the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor? Thank you, the minutes are approved. And this brings us to the first of our four presentations this evening. Last year we were honored to have a local member of the Canadian Armed Forces come to speak with us about the importance of remembering veterans. This year, due to restrictions in place because of COVID, the Armed Forces has put together a veteran speaking series, and we have one of those videos that we'll play this time, if it's ready to go. Okay.
Hi, everyone. My name is Harjeet Sajjan, Minister of National Defense for Canada, and I wanted to deliver a short message to you before you watch this great Veterans Week video. I know this has been a tough 8 months for all of us, and I wanted to thank you for doing your part to stop the spread of COVID-19. On Remembrance Day, we remember the bravery of our veterans, and we reflect on the sacrifices they made to fight for our freedom and defend Canada. This is also a time to think of the people who are serving in the Canadian Armed Forces today, so that our country, our values, and our way of life are well defended. They are the veterans of tomorrow. I hope that you enjoy hearing more about our veterans and that you share what you have learned with those around you, lest we forget.
Hello, I'm a member of the Canadian Armed Forces, and I am proud to join a number of my colleagues in this video and share our story with you today. Like all members of the military, my job is to keep you and Canada safe. On Remembrance Day, we remember Canadian sailors, soldiers, and aviators who have risked or even lost their lives so we could live with freedoms, in peace, and enjoying our Canadian way of life. We remember those Canadians who left their families, friends, and communities during times of conflict and war for months or even years at a time to fight for freedom and for peace. They did so and continue to do so, knowing that they may never come home again.
Picture yourself in the 1940s, walking for hours, carrying a heavy backpack, drenched in rain or sweating through extreme heat. You haven't bathed or eaten a meal that didn't come out of a can in weeks. You dig a deep hole in the ground to catch a few hours sleep, which is often interrupted by a duty watch or an enemy attack. You are a Canadian soldier.
Feel the freezing winds and water of the Atlantic as you stand watch for enemy submarines and airplanes trying to stop you from delivering vital supplies. You may be in knee-deep water that has flooded your ship and you haven't seen land for weeks. You are a Canadian sailor.
Now you're flying through fog, clouds, and rain in the dark of night without radar. Enemy artillery shells rock your plane and test your courage. You don't know whether you'll make it back to the airfield or crash into enemy territory, but you have to continue on to drop bombs on your target. You are a Canadian aviator.
You are one of 1 million Canadians who wonder if you'll ever come home again, if you'll ever kiss your mother or hug your father again, if you'll ever grow old. 45,000 Canadians did not. They never returned from the Second World War.
On Remembrance Day, we also pay tribute to veterans of the Korean and Afghanistan wars, as well as numerous other international missions. More than 500 Canadians lost their lives in Korea, and 158 Canadian Armed Forces members did not come back from Afghanistan. Many who returned carried the consequences of war with them, battling long-term physical, psychological, and emotional wounds. Despite the unimaginable challenges, generations of our bravest and best Canadians have risked their lives for our freedom. Determined to keep Canadians safe, to defend our way of life, and to try and make the world a better place. That's something we must never forget, the unimaginable heroism and great sacrifices made by our Canadian veterans.
Today, Canadian Armed Forces members continue to risk their own health and safety to protect others. While many continue to be deployed overseas on United Nations and NATO missions, others serve here at home, responding to natural disasters like floods, forest fires, and snowstorms across the country, carrying out life-saving search and rescue missions by air, ground, and sea, responding to about 1,000 search and rescue calls each year.
More recently, others put their medical training to work, helping to fight the COVID-19 pandemic. Whatever and wherever the need, Canadians can count on us to keep them safe and our country safe, just as our veterans did. That's the link that ties today's military members with those who came before us. We are all part of the Canadian family, and we are all in this together. Thank you.
So there's a number of the videos in this series, and staff have indicated that we'd be sharing those links, and we can encourage those in the community as well to be looking to those videos. Like many things this year, Remembrance Day will look a little bit differently than other years. So the information that the Canadian Armed Forces have sent out this year, something we'll help to send out into the community as well. So the recommended motion from this presentation is that the speaker series video from the Canadian Armed Forces regarding the importance of remembering veterans be received, and that council directs staff to share the video links on the municipal website and Facebook page. Is there a mover and seconder for this? Councillor Dalgany, Councillor Ferguson, any discussion? All in favor? Thank you, that carries. And this brings us to our second presentation of the evening. We have Mr. Scott Newton, who's the general manager of the Mississippi River Power Corporation. And I believe we have Paul Virgin as well. There he is, president of the Mississippi River Power Corporation board with us to provide a year in review of the MRPC and its activity. So welcome to you both. And feel free when you're... So if we just get the microphone on there, and Paul, when you're behind the plastic, you can feel free to take the mask off if it's more comfortable while you're speaking.
Thank you. My glasses won't fog up now, as those of you that wear glasses. Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Scott and I are here to discuss and present the year in review, 2019, which was a more normal year than 2020 has been, thank God. But talking about year 2020, I would like to publicly acknowledge the work and efforts of our staff this year during the pandemic. As you know, the river doesn't stop flowing during these times. It keeps on going. Therefore, it's essential to keep the hydro plant operational. And if it wasn't for the dedicated staff of Merlin Napton and Tammy Gallagher, Frankie Minnelli, and most of all, Scott Newton at the head of things, we wouldn't be in the position that we're in today. So I would like to publicly acknowledge and thank them for their efforts. Now that I've mentioned who our staff is, our current board is myself as president, Adrian Foster as the vice president, Lyman Gardner is our secretary treasurer, Gary Dalgety is a director, and Mayor Krista Lowry is our council representative. We are the generation side. MRPC is the generation side of the old Almont Hydro. And I can tell you, I was very familiar with that. Dad was a board member for 32 years on old Almont Hydro. And those of you that are old enough to remember that facility, probably Denzel, you're the only one old enough. Way back when, that was part of Almont, but it was a voted position. An election was run the same as for a council at that point in time. And we had a number of prominent citizens in Almont that sat on that board for many years. MRPC is a corporation under the Ontario Business Corporations Act and was formed in 2000 when we were required to be deregulated and become our own separate company. The corporation of the Municipality of Mississippi Mills owns 100% of the shares in MRPC, and MRPC owns the Brian Gallagher Generating Station. That was built and completed in 2010. The intake facility, which was the old generating station, is the upper building on the Middle Falls, and the substation is adjacent to the old generating station. And in 2018, we not only refurbished, we basically rebuilt the Mill Fall and earthen dams, and that was completed in the course of 1 year. To the satisfaction of everybody, and has now become and will be part of the walk program, including the stairway, the old mill worker stairway. We operate the hydro office building at 28 Mill Street for the next short little while. We lease the building from MRPC, and we sublease the building from the municipality and sublease portions of that to Ottawa River Power Corporation, who are moving with us into our new rental facility. We're responsible for the building expenses, and that's part of the reason that we are looking at making the move. Those building expenses are becoming untenable. For example, the entire water system, the water is undrinkable. Asbestos was discovered when we tore down the walls in the upper apartment, so there's a major refurbishment that's going to be required to bring that building back into appropriate functioning. The Metcalf Heritage Park, again, we lease the park from MRPC, but we operate it. We're responsible for maintenance and upgrades, and we planned and covered the cost of the designs and the upgrades to the public washroom in the park in 2012. And significant upgrades in landscaping of the park in 2014, including the boat launch and additions to the river walk. And we have other plans potentially down the road to improve the park. However, those are not being planned on being undertaken in the immediate future. And that's my portion, and I will ask Scott if he will discussed 2019 year in review, and we're both available to answer questions after this presentation.
Thanks, Paul, and thanks everyone for this opportunity tonight to give you an update on our operations. So this is sort of a, as it states pretty clearly, a year in review for 2019. So it's year in review, our operations, flows, and different things we dealt with during the year. First thing we'll look at is operational improvements and employee safety. Every year we have a staff training matrix, so every year there's training involved. In 2019, we did lockout, tagout, working at heights, WMIS, CPR, first aid, and AED training. We also installed a bridge crane in the new station, which is it doesn't sound big, but it's a major component to helping with our employee safety. We have to change some big parts on top of the generator, and we had no real safe way of doing that. So this bridge crane helps lift the heavier parts up, and we can also have a tie-off point to that bridge crane so our staff are tied off properly. We added to our maintenance schedule inspections of the newly built, as Paul mentioned, the millfall and earthen dams. And we made significant improvements to the millfall log operations. We built this dam in 2018, and the first spring that it got tested was just so happened to be the second highest flow on record in the, you know, in the 100 years of records. So it got a good test. It performed well, but we noticed a few things that we wanted to change to make things a little easier and safer for our staff. The main thing was extending the walkway. So when the dam was built, the walkway only extended over the first five bays. It's tough to tell in this picture, but this last bay closest to us, the walkway doesn't extend. In the picture on the left, which is the before image, and on the right is the after image. So we extended that walkway, and we also extended the rail system over bays 1, 2, and 6. So that rail system is for the gantry crane, which we hook our chain hoist to, that so we can lift the logs out of the dam. So now we can lift out of all 6 bays, much easier and safer for our staff. We also made changes to the logs themselves to make it easier to get them out of there, even during high water. Rather than try and get 5 logs out of the middle bays, we can get the top 2 or 3 out of each bay. Much easier to do, even in high water. So if we have a high spring and then all of a sudden we get another big rain event and the water goes way up, we can still get some logs out, where in past years we couldn't do that. Once the water was high, we couldn't get any more logs out. So with these changes, we can do that now. More on operational improvements. We made numerous improvements to our SCADA system. That's our supervisory controls and data acquisition system. Basically, it's the brain of the station. We replaced the server. It was running on a server 2003, and we couldn't do upgrades and add new software to the program. So we made those changes and resulted in more efficient operation because we can make little changes here and there, allowing us to sort of fine-tune our operation. We had divers in to remove debris from the intake. Once in a while, debris, rock from the river, rolls down the river and gets caught in our intake at the bottom. And eventually you have to clean that out, or the racks will block up. Not as much water flow will get through, or the operators can't get the trash rack cleaning device right to the bottom to clean the racks properly. So we did that in 2019 as well. We completed a dam safety assessment on the main weir. That's something we were required to do every 10 years. No major concerns with the dam, although we are implementing, our engineers are implementing a monitoring program for us, so we'll sort of take pictures in the same locations twice a year and watch for changes in the dam. Replaced all our ladders with Class 1 fiberglass. We started work to remove the wires on the corner of the old generating station, so there's wires that came from the transformer site across the river down by the Victoria Woolen Mill. And they were right on the corner of the building, right where our trash rack cleaner is. So our operators could, if they turned the unit and had the boom up in the air, they could make contact with those wires. So very unsafe. So we worked with Ottawa River Power and had those wires moved. And we also commenced work on replacement for the Hawk. So that's the trash rack cleaner. That's what we use to clean the racks where the water comes in. The unit's 30 years old. It takes a beating. It's used every day. It's a crucial piece of equipment for our operation. Without it, we'd see immediate reductions in generation. So this is a major component of that we have to replace, but so we've taken our time and done it right, but we've got the sort of the search narrowed down. We've got a meeting, a virtual meeting later this week. My staff and myself are meeting with a representative from the supplier and an operator and an engineer from the company that makes them. So we hope to have more information after that. Tours of the generating station have been a main part of what we try and do. Lots of people are interested in the building down in the park. The park gets a lot of use, and the station is a big point of interest. 2020 has kind of put a bit of a damper on that. We've put a bit of a hold on tours because of COVID. But in 2019, we did numerous tours, anywhere from school groups, Boy Scouts, groups from the Fairview Manor, Youth Center, that sort of thing. And also we encourage our staff, if you see someone wandering around the station when you're down there, invite them in for a tour, and that's worked really well. We've had a lot of interest in that. It's also been a great deterrent of vandalism. We had a problem a few years ago with kids down in the park, and we noticed damage around the plant, And one day I invited them in and gave six of them a tour of the plant and showed them all around. They had lots of questions, and we never had a problem after that. I mean, as the cycle of kids come through, you know, the problems come back again, but it was a great result there. We also did a cleanup of the river. So in 2018, when we were doing the millfall and earthen dams, we had the North Channel dewatered, and we did a major cleanup of the North Channel and took out a couple dumpster loads full of garbage and debris from the river. So we thought, let's do the same thing in the Lower Falls area. So our staff did that last year, and we filled a truckload of stuff we pulled out of the river, a lot of real estate signs and the like. But so we're going to continue to do that as we can. In the spring, I mentioned the high spring and the flooding. So our staff voluntarily spent weeks in the spring assisting residents with sandbagging, supplying and operating pumps, and during the flooding, and certainly over the north on the North Channel, that really helped prevent any serious flooding whatsoever. And we also helped on Water Street as well. We added a wall downstream of the earthen dam to prevent erosion. So the earthen dam, when we rebuilt it, the back side of it was just to be sloped and done with riprap. But after it was built, we noticed that we were seeing some erosion. And it's not affecting the integrity of the dam itself, but the safety of people walking over it. So we partnered with the adjacent landowner and added a wall on there that looks good and serves the purpose of solidifying the walking portion of the dam as well. We completely re-landscaped the little park by the old generating station as well. It was sort of underused and not all that attractive, and we did some landscaping, made it look. There's on the left-hand side is the before, and on the right-hand side is the after. So we added an accessible pathway and an accessible picnic table, new bench, some trees, and a garden. And the park gets a lot of use nowadays. Not on a day like today, but it does get a lot of use. We worked a lot on our strategic planning in 2019. Worked on a 25-year financial model, employee compensation review, vision and mission statements. And we hope to complete this in 2021. We've got a lot of work ahead of us, but that's the goal, is to complete it in 2021. We celebrated the inaugural Water Power Day in Ontario, as did the municipality. The municipality signed on under the charter to celebrate that day, which is June 20th every year, Sir Adam Beck's birthday. I joined the Mississippi River Watershed Public Advisory Committee, so that's an endeavor by the Conservation Authority, which should be completed in the next 6 months or so. We continued our penstock claim process and settled on a date for mediation in 2020, which did happen. I'll touch more on that in a little later. We completed the purchase of the earthen dam land, which was privately owned before, and we declared a dividend to the municipality of $225,000. Operations, we completed a site review and preliminary design options for the bywash. We've continued on with that this year, but the bywash is the little chute beside the old generating station, which is our intake. You need that to pass anything you pull out of the racks, weeds and ice, and to be able to push ice aside. Without that, you'd have a very difficult time cleaning the racks. We removed 15 logs from the Millfall Dam in the spring to remove flooding, as I mentioned. We repointed that little substation building, replaced the logs in the bywash, reducing leakage. So the bywash, that's what I just talked about, we've got logs in there. In the summer months, it's particularly important. Those logs have been in there for years and years, and they were warped, and we're getting a lot of leakage through there. So in the summer months, when you have very little flow in the river, that leakage through there, I see dollar signs going through that. I'm not sure everybody else doesn't see that. But so we replaced the logs and tightened that up so we didn't have that leakage anymore. We also completed significant repairs to turbine number 2. Just after Christmas in 2018, we had a failure of the turbine. Something went wrong in the turbine. It shut down. We determined that the cause was inside the turbine itself, so we dewatered, took it apart, and found that there's some faulty parts inside. The turbine had been operating for 30 years. It was reused from the old station, but it's still a very good design. It's just some of the parts inside it were, the steel strength was less than would be used nowadays. So we took it apart, replaced those parts, and it's essentially good as new now. We also completed various preventative maintenance testing, mainly on our main breakers and our transformer. That's sort of looking, we do that on a schedule. Some of it's every year, some of it's every 3 years, and you compare the results, looking for elevated gases in the transformer oil testing and that sort of thing, so you can tell if there's a problem coming before it actually becomes a problem. Flow summary. So in December of 2018, we had a lot of precipitation that led to high flows. So we started off 2019 very well with high flows. Sort of leveled off throughout the winter. And then in the spring, we, as I mentioned, we had the extremely high flows. They peaked at 275 cubic meters per second. For reference, today the flow was about 24 cubic meters per second. So 275 coming down the river, that's a lot of water. Only 1998 had a higher spring peak. The records in Appleton at the stream gauge there, which is the closest one upstream, go back to 1918, and 2019 was the second only to 1998. This chart just shows the spring peak flow. On the far left, you see the average flow, which is about 151 cubic meters per second. That's the average over the, about the past 50 years. In 2018, we had 180 CMS. And this past year in 2020, we had 140. And then you can see that the large red line, that's 2019 at 275. This chart looks at flows throughout the year. So the red line is the is what we saw in 2019. And the blue line is the average, is the 25 year average in this case. This is done measured in cubic meters per second, as I said. So as I mentioned, the flows started off the year quite well because of the rain in December. You can see that sort of that red line leveled off in the winter and was sort of around the average, a little below average. And then that massive spike in the spring, which stayed well above average until early June. Precipitation levels for the summer were lower than normal, and that resulted in flows dipping a little below normal. We had sort of average flows in the fall. And then we got some rain finally in October and November that boosted flows a little bit. And we ended up the year about with about average flows. It's the same chart, but the yellow line here indicates we need about 40 cubic meters per second running through the plant to run both units at full capacity. So anything around that yellow line or slightly above is great. We're running at full capacity. But once we get to the green line, we start to see a reduction in our output. This is because the water level, when there's that much flow coming down the river, our head pond, so where the water comes into the station, only rises a small portion of what the tail race rises. So the tail race is where the water comes out of the station. So the lower river tends to rise more than our head pond, because our head pond is so small where the water comes into the station. You know, from the upper falls to the middle falls, that's, you know, 150 meters downstream. It's a very small area. So in the spring, we saw their head pond raised 1 meter, but the tail race, where the water comes out of the station, raised 3 meters. So 2 meters, we lost 2 meters of head. So the head is the drop from the tail, from the head pond to the tail race. So we lost 2 meters, and that's a big deal in generation. So when you lose two meters, what does that mean? Well, it means about 500 kilowatts in lost production for us, or about $50,000 over the month. So we don't like to see those big peaks in the spring. The higher it gets, we start to see a bit of a reduction. So we like a nice even spring where the water comes up, the snow melts very, very slowly, and we start to get a bit of rain towards the end of the snow melt to sustain that flow. So revenue, our projections, because we're a run of river station, so we take what Mother Nature gives us. We can't store water. We have no means of storage. So we base our revenue projections for the year on average flows. So we look at the average flow over the past 50 years at the stream gauge in Appleton, and that's how we sort of project our revenue for the year. The maximum flow that the station can pass is about 40 CMS, as I mentioned. And when the flows get beyond 60 or 65 CMS, we start to see a reduction. Now, we budgeted $2.4 million in revenue last year, and we earned just over $3 million. And that's... We were able to stay online. I'll go to the next slide. So this is the monthly production. So in the blue column is the monthly projected revenue, and the green column is the actual revenue. So there's a couple things with this one. You look at January, February, March, I said that flows were about average, but you can see we produced more than the average. That's because we had far fewer problems with ice buildup. We were able to generate much, much more because of our dedicated staff being there to clean the racks. Also because the Enerdue Dam certainly helps get an ice cover on the upper river, and we have less ice problems when that's there. And so that's essentially it. That's why we see the above average in the winter. Spring, again, we were able to keep it running. It was less generation, but we allow for that in the spring. And then the summer, as I mentioned before, we had low flows, and you can't do much about that. So we were lower than average in the summer. Generation revenue, this is a look at the past 6 years. I just put this chart in here just to show the variability from year to year. We're not doing anything really differently. We try and keep the plant running as much as possible. It's just the water coming down the river. So you can get back-to-back years like we saw in 2016 and 2017. 2016 was, we had a drought from, the end of May? I think we were in a level one drought from the end of May until early December. We were shut down for 5 months almost completely. So 2016, and then the following year, 2017, we had our best year on record, where flows were high right through the summer, and we generated close to capacity right through the summer. So just to show the variability. Shareholder payments. As Paul had mentioned previously, the generation assets of the old Elmont Hydro were transferred by the municipality to MRPC in exchange for a promissory note. We pay interest on that promissory note annually. MRPC, or the municipality, also owns 100% of the shares in the corporation, and a dividend is paid when available. So you can see the past 5 years, $600,000 in interest on that promissory note, and $900,000 in dividend payments. I'll touch briefly on the penstock claim because
I'm just going to add the dividend payment part of you may wonder why the amounts and whatever. We're required to maintain a balance in reserve the equivalent of 10% of the outstanding.
Sorry, actually, can I just get you to pass the microphone? I kind of forgot we have to do that to record. Thanks,
We're required to maintain a minimum of 10% in our cash reserve, and that's a condition of our Infrastructure Ontario loan. So even though you may think, well, we had a great year, but the previous year being a bad year took our reserve down, and actually for one day we were below the reserve, which Infrastructure Ontario picked up on. But even from that standpoint, the next year, great revenue year, but we still have to keep that reserve up. So that's where the numbers come from.
Thanks for that, Paul.
So I know you're probably short for time, so I'll go through this fairly quickly. So the penstock, you can see in the photo there in the top right, that's when I'm talking about penstocks, that's what it is. It's a 10-foot diameter pipe. They connect the old generating station, which is our intake, to the new station. They're 10 feet in diameter, 5/8-inch steel, and they were lowered into, two of them lowered in the riverbed to connect the intake to the new station. Station came online in 2010, and the penstock number 2 collapsed in April of 2012. Knowing that they were built identically and designed identically, we shut down number 1 as a precautionary measure. We didn't want the same thing to happen to it, not knowing what the cause was. We had an engineer come in and essentially design a repair. So we completed repairs to number 1 in February of 2013, and it was back online, and to number 2 in November of 2013 and brought it back online. Total expenses and losses were approximately $4.3 million. This slide shows the extent of the damage. So on the far left, it's hard to see on the slide, but the far left, that's the intake facility. And where it drops down, where the water comes out of that, is called the draft tube. So we connected what's called the transition piece onto that draft tube. So the draft tube is rectangular at the end. The transition piece just takes it from rectangular to a round shape to connect to the penstock. The damage started at that transition piece and went downstream about 55 meters. This just shows that. So that's 5/8-inch steel. That's those penstocks. It took a lot of pressure inside those penstocks to tear it and fold it up like that. The payments, we received payments in 2013 and 2014 from our insurer for all of our losses and damages and repairs associated with unit number 2, the one that collapsed. Number one, it was determined that that was not an insurable claim because we shut it down on our own accord to prevent the failure. It's kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't. If we had let it run and it failed, then we would have been negligent. So we had to make the smart decision and shut it down. In 2014, we filed a statement of claim against the engineers and contractors involved for the losses and expenses associated with number one. A concurrent statement of claim was filed by our insurer at the same time for essentially everything they paid us for our losses for number two. In 2019, the Superior Court Justice of Ontario capped the damages at $2 million plus expenses. Mediation was scheduled for 2020. Mediation was initially unsuccessful. We continued to negotiate with the defendants, sort of a bit of a back and forth, and we're seeking a pretrial conference in 2021. 2020 projects, we started on our detailed design work for the bywash. I mentioned that we options development back in 2019. We started on the detailed design and initial discussions with the regulatory authorities. We continued development of our strategic plan. We worked on the office relocation after discussions with the municipality. They should be completed this week, and we'll be moving very shortly. We did repairs to unit number one in August and September of this year. So we were able to shut down that unit because we didn't have enough water. That's typically what we have in the summer. So I scheduled our major maintenance for the summer. So we were able to shut it down and do the work without losing any revenue. It was preventative maintenance. We saw what happened the previous year with the other unit. I talked about the inferior parts inside the turbine. So we shut this one down and replaced those parts before it failed so we didn't have a problem. If it shut down in the spring, the problem had failed, we hadn't fixed it, but if it failed in the spring, we can lose $200,000 in a month just having one unit down. So we thought better to get the problem fixed now, so we did. We've narrowed the search on a trash rack cleaner and have a meeting, as I mentioned, later this week. We were alerted to some minor erosion downstream of the millfall dam. Looks like the change in the flow pattern downstream of that millfall dam after we repaired it has caused a bit of circulation on one shore, and it's starting to erode the shoreline, so we're in danger of losing some trees into the river if we don't address it soon. So we've got a repair design planned. I've talked to the Conservation Authority and MNR, and they've both given their initial blessing, but there's a little bit of paperwork to go through at this point yet. So that plan is well underway. At this point, if there's any questions, we're happy to answer.
All right, thank you both for your presentation. Are there any comments or questions from council? Councilor Ferguson?
Yes, thank you. I have just one question for Paul in reference to the water at 28 Mill Street. You said the water is not drinkable. Is there...
No, the pipes that are in there, we've had continual issues with them. We've had the plumber in to work with them and all, but the water is not potable, so it's only what we drink out of that.
Okay.
It's just unavailable for usage.
Thank you.
Councillor Maiden, did I see your hand?
Thanks very much for the presentation. And I saw you manning the sandbags there, Scott, during the flood down on Coleman Island quite often. And I don't know if I had got a chance to thank you for that, but I think on behalf of the residents, I would like to thank you. You saved some properties there, you and the firefighters, I think. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Holmes?
Yeah, thank you for the presentation. It was most interesting, and I'm always trying to learn new things. One thing I am kind of interested in, when the plant shuts down, what happens with your staff? Do you have to lay them off? Are you able to redeploy them, or how does that work?
There's always lots to do. In a typical year, it wouldn't shut down. That period of time where we had the plant shut down off and on for 5 months, we're still maintaining the park down there. We take the opportunity to do maintenance. If we have maintenance planned for later in the year, we would move it up if we see a drought like that. There's always something to keep them busy. So we haven't had a period where we've had enough downtime that we've had to consider laying someone off. We've always got lots of maintenance to do and preventative maintenance, as I mentioned.
Thank you.
Were there any other questions or comments? Go ahead, Councillor.
I just have one more. Have you ever compared yourself to other similar municipal facilities to compare how you are in terms of efficiency and whatnot?
Yeah, actually, I was looking at efficiency of our plant versus other plants just a couple weeks ago, and don't want to toot our own horn too much, but we ranked higher. Our efficiency, I don't have it with me, but our efficiency in the past 10 years, well, of the full years, we were down a couple of years from the penstock repairs, but the full years we've been in operation, our average is, I think it's somewhere around 55-56%, whereas a lot of plants, I've looked at some similar plants around, I won't name them right now, but anywhere from 43, I think, and the highest was about 49, so we ranked higher. In talking to a lot of the owners of or operators of plants around here, with regard to the Hawk, the trash rack cleaner, we visit a lot of plants to see, you know, what other people are using. And the comment we got from their winter operation was their trash rack cleaners aren't sort of as robust as ours, and they don't see a need to, because in the winter, if they get ice in the plant at night, they shut it down and walk away. Whereas we have someone there all night cleaning the racks to keep things running, to keep that revenue coming in. So I think that makes a big difference. Also looking at other renewables, you know, wind and solar, we certainly rank much higher in terms of efficiency.
Thank you. And if you had any of those stats to share with us,
yeah, sure
I'd
can.
Be most interested yeah. in them. It's
yeah.
quite
I mean,
fascinating.
It's, the comparisons I used data available on these companies' websites. So the accuracy of it, I'm not sure, because they talk about average generation. So I don't know what period they're using. So I think if I share it, I would maybe leave out some of the company names, or I can, you know, there's somebody to do it. But certainly I can share that. I've got our efficiency chart for the past 10 years.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any further comments or questions? Okay, seeing none, thank you very much, both Scott and Paul, for coming out and sharing your presentation with us. It's much appreciated. And with that, I'm looking for a mover and seconder for the recommended motion that the delegation by Scott Newton, General Manager, and Paul Virgin, President of the Mississippi River Power Corporation, regarding the MRPC's year in review, be received for information. Councillor Maiden and Councillor Holmes, all in favor? Thank you. That's carried. Our next presentation is J3. And we will have Deb Napton, who is the Member Services Representative for the Ontario Federation of Agriculture, with us. She'll be joining us by WebEx. But we're going to begin with a short video. And this the presentation is on Farm 911. It's the Emily Project. So we have a short video to start with, and then we'll bring Deb online with us.
Let's talk about working alone on the farm.
In order to be safe, you need to stop, think, and then act.
Before you head out for the day, make sure your cell phone is fully charged with the emergency number programmed in.
It's important to let someone know where you're working for the day, and don't forget to check in on a regular basis.
You want to make sure you always wear the right safety equipment and keep a first aid kit in the machine you will be using.
Have your farm 911 number clearly visible so first responders can know exactly where you are if something was to happen.
We often overlook our mental state of mind. Are you feeling sick, distracted, or overwhelmed? Consider rescheduling or reaching out for help.
Conditions can change at a moment's notice. It's important to know if any of these changes might put you more at risk.
If something happened and you needed help, would anyone know where to find you?
Stop, think, and act. A small effort can go a big way in keeping yourself and your family safe while working alone.
And we'll just take a second to get Deb online with us.
Sorry. Thank you very much. So thank you to everyone for having me tonight. For anyone who doesn't know me, my name is Deb Napton. I work for the Ontario Federation of Agriculture. I'm a member services representative, and I cover the counties of Leonard Renfrew and the municipality of Ottawa-Carleton. And we're actually also municipal Mississippi Mills Residences. We have a small dairy farm just outside of Elmont. So the Emily Project was initiated in 2017 by the family of Emily Trudeau. Emily was critically injured in a farm accident at a second farm. There were no buildings and no 911 sign. Her family called 911, but first responders couldn't find the field, and they actually drove by it a couple of times while they were trying to find the field. And Emily actually subsequently passed away from her injuries that day. This is the Trudeau family, along with the Farm 911 Committee at the official launch, held at the Hastings County Plowing Match. So the Farm 911 project, their strategic plan, mission statement, is just to improve emergency services in rural communities. That's the big picture goal of the program. And that all rural properties, whether buildings are present or not, have 911 signs posted. So as I mentioned, the objectives are focused on more than just the 911 signs. The program works with municipalities to make the signs available while providing a simple and unified system for ordering through the website, access to other forms and information that can be distributed to landowners and stakeholders, any other info that's required to support the program. It works with community partners to help fund the sign purchases where possible, and then works to promote the program to landowners while helping them to understand how to contact emergency services efficiently. The official launch, as I mentioned, was August 23rd, 2017 at the Hastings County Plowing Match and Trade Show. This is the website. This website is available to all municipalities that start to become part of the Farm 911 project. It's a central spot. All the information about the project is on here. Under the Order Your Sign pull-down menu, any municipality can put a link to their website, and landowners can order the signs right off this website directly. There's already a variety of templates created for postcards, brochures, other information to hand out to landowners and to agribusinesses in the area to explain what the project is about. Lots of social media presence. There's 15 municipalities currently participating. And actually, this is 3 weeks ago. I believe there are two more that have come on board for sure. And Ottawa-Carleton is actually in the process of becoming part of the Farm 911 project as well. And that's my presentation. So I would love to have questions if there are any.
Great, thank you very much. And sorry, I'm just kind of, there we go. Can she hear me, or are you going to be translating? So yeah, maybe we'll just do that and have Jen help us out. So first of all, thank you very much, Deb. It's a very, very important project, and I appreciate that you've taken the time to come and talk to us about it.
Time.
Councillor Holmes, I saw your hand go up. If you could use your microphone. Oh, yeah. Yeah, use your microphone so the folks at home can hear your question, and then Jen will pass it to Deb.
Thank you, Deb, for the presentation. And I think we need to just, before I ask my question, is just acknowledge that Councillor Girard and I worked with Sheila James, the Health and Safety Consultant for Ontario, Workplace Safety and Prevention Services, along with Deb to get this presentation here tonight. So we're really pleased to have her. My question is, can you tell us about other municipalities which have adopted the Emily Project and give us some examples of how they have encouraged the installation of the signs?
Sure. Yep. So there are several municipalities in Eastern Ontario that have put the program in. Usually what happens is, ideally, county council kind of coordinates, or the county coordinates the program each one of the municipalities work within the county to pass its own bylaw. And ideally, everybody works together, roll the project out at the same time. So then, you know, you can sort of gather momentum across the county. In several counties, they've initiated a program in conjunction with the Federation of Agriculture that has sort of helped create interest. It's helped to roll it out, and it's maybe decreased the cost in some cases. In Northumberland, in Stormont, Dundas, and Glengarry, they had county councils came up with money to decrease the cost of the signs. In Renfrew, the Renfrew Farm Safety Association contributes $25 for each sign that's purchased. And actually, I'm working with Ottawa Federation and Armpire Federation to have the rollout of the signs in Ottawa Carleton. And they have each committed $1,500 for a total of $3,000. And they're going to offer a discount of $25 a sign for every sign purchased to a maximum of 120 signs. And they will be putting some kind of limit on it so one farm doesn't buy 15 or 20 signs. But those kind of programs really help generate interest and get the program rolling. And I can say that I have had significant interest in Ottawa Carleton now that the program is starting to be talked about. There are definitely people that are looking to put the signs on their gate and on their field entrances that don't have buildings.
Thank you, Deb.
Thank you. Are there other questions? Go ahead, Councillor Girard.
Thank you, Deb. I actually was wondering if there has ever been an inclusion with, for example, bicyclers. We have a lot of people who bicycle in Mississippi Mills. There's a lot of people who hike as well. Having the farm numbers would be beneficial to those people as well. Have we ever talked to snowmobile clubs or anybody else? Because it would be beneficial to more than just the farmers themselves.
And possibly, I think we are really trying to keep the process separate so that it is strictly for EMS to find farmers in an emergency. There hasn't been any real movement towards working with other organizations. And I'm not saying there couldn't be, but that's not the focus of the project as we have it right now. And I also would say it's certainly beneficial to farmers in other ways besides the emergency services. A lot of farms don't have buildings anymore. And, you know, if you're getting fuel delivered or fertilizer or seed or whatever, it's much easier than saying the third gateway past the Clayton Road on the right-hand side. It's easier to have 911 number as well.
Councillor Ferguson.
Thank you, Deb. Would you have put a cost to implement in Lanark County?
I don't. Sorry. I could certainly find out. Marie White actually just reached out recently to Racy Wald, who is the MSR in Prince Edward, Hastings, Northumberland, and myself, wondering about starting to have some talks about the project. But as far as a cost, I could figure it out. It varies significantly across each municipality in Lanark. It changes a lot depending on where the member lives. Okay.
Go ahead, Councillor.
Second question. Does that also, are you including in that bush lots as well as farmland?
I guess it could. I mean, our target really is farm business registration members. Mm-hmm. So certainly there could be, you know, a registered farm business. Like I'm thinking of our place, we would certainly have a field enter, an entrance that is a bush lot or a pasture off our farm property. So yes, I guess it could, but strictly a bush lot, Probably not. I think it's more for actual agricultural land.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, but that's really was my question, really the farmer part of it. Bush lots attached to farms, you know, that type of thing, not an individual bush lot per se, but I thank you for that.
Right now, our focus is farm business registrants for sure.
Good, thank you.
Councillor Holmes.
So I think Deb has answered the question that if, as long as you have a farm business number, you could use it out of bush lot because that is part of agriculture.
Part of the business.
Yeah.
Were there any other questions or comments? Go ahead, Councillor.
Hopefully for next meeting, Councillor Girard and I will have a motion ready requesting that a request go to Lanark County to assist us with this project. So more to come on it.
So just to provide a little bit of insight, what's at the county right now, it's just very preliminary discussion has started at the Agriculture Committee, the subcommittee of council, and we had asked that staff come back with additional information about what other counties have done and some recommendations about what we could as a committee then recommend up to council. So I think that timing would be really, really well thought to bring it out at that time too, because it is something that's being discussed at the county at this time.
So I think, just to ask Debbie, I think she can be used as a really good resource. Mm-hmm. And it is a farm safety issue, an agricultural safety issue. So I'm hoping that we can move forward fairly quickly on it.
Any last comments? Okay, seeing not, Jen, if you can just pass on our appreciation to Deb for coming and speaking with us this evening. It's a very important issue, and we appreciate her expertise and time.
Awesome. Thanks. Thanks again so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks so much, Deb. So I'm looking at the recommended motion.
Good night, guys.
Good night. I'm looking at the recommended motion in the agenda that the delegation by Deb Napton, Member Service Representative of the Ontario Federation of Agriculture, regarding Farm 911, the Emily Project, be received for information. Is there a mover and seconder for this? Councillor Holmes and Councillor Girard. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favour. Thank you, and that carries. And this brings us to our final presentation of the evening. We'll have Stephanie Gray joining us momentarily. Stephanie is the coordinator of the Lanark County Situation Table, and she will be discussing the community plan for safety and well-being. Let's just give a moment for Stephanie to join us. Okay. So if you can, Jen, just pass on. Oh, there she goes. Okay.
Go ahead, sir.
Okay. It's funny not to be able to see you. I'm used to Zoom where I can see all the faces. So I'm really happy to be here tonight. I want to thank Mayor Lowry for inviting me to make a presentation about the collaboration in Lanark County and some of the projects that we're working on. For those of you who haven't met me before, I've been involved with the Lanark County Situation Table Project since 2015 in a part-time position, and I'll get into a little bit of the background around it. Can you see the slide presentation okay?
Yeah, looks great. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so just a bit of an overview of what I'd like to talk about tonight, and I know you've had a long meeting, so I do get enthusiastic about these things. Please cut me off when you've heard enough. But basically, I just want to give a bit of a background on the community safety model, the project with the Lanark County Situation Table, your community plan for safety and well-being, and then some of the other activities that are currently underway in Lanark County and Smiths Falls around collaboration and training and mentorship and some of the really cool things that are happening. So just to start off, The model that we're talking about for community safety was first introduced to the local police services boards and municipalities. Back in 2013, primarily through the Ontario Association of Police Services Boards and also through AMO, where municipalities were exposed to it as well, and it highlighted a collaborative community safety approach. Basically, it was meant to address the fact that crime rates were falling, but service calls continued to rise, and what could be done to identify root causes of crime and create a plan to mitigate them and hopefully to get some of those policing costs a little bit more under control. And through this process, the social determinants of health and community safety were at the forefront of the whole thing. So there was a real link between determining what those root causes were and how we could proceed in an effective way to make things better. I'm really proud of the work that Leonard County and Smiths Falls have done in terms of community accountability and taking on this approach. And it started basically with a partnership between the Leonard County OPP and the Perth Police Services Board in 2014, when the initiative was taken to move forward with this model. So the Perth Police Services Board incorporated the principles around the model into its business plan. The town of Perth added it to its updated strategic plan. And as part of all of this, we applied for a Proceeds of Crime Frontline Policing Grant to pilot the Leonard County Situation Table project, which consisted of both the Situation Table, which I'll explain in a minute, and the Community Safety Planning process. We were successful with the grant, and we started the project in September 2015. And even though, so since 2015, it has been funded through provincial grants, all of which have been streamed through the Perth Police Services Board, but the model has always taken the whole county and the town of Smiths Falls into account because it needs a regional approach to be successful. So the project itself has those two components, but at the root of it is the aim to proactively address those root causes of crime and identify the primary risk factors that are affecting vulnerable populations and situations in the area, and then working to build a plan that will mitigate them. All of those things have required collaboration with frontline agencies, lots of partners, which has not been an issue in Leonard County and Smiths Falls at all. We've been very effective with those partnerships. With the Situation Table, the partners have come together. We have about two dozen partners who work together on a consistent basis to provide immediate help for people who are deemed to be at what we call acutely elevated risk of harm. So if an agency identifies someone who they're working with and they have done everything they can think of to help that person, they can bring it to the Situation Table for a referral. It's a de-identified process with privacy protections. And if it's deemed to meet that threshold of acutely elevated risk, then we form an intervention team with the most appropriate agencies who can actually help with the risk factors that are identified and try to connect that individual to services that will mitigate the risk that they have. So we use a four-filter process, which helps to ensure the privacy and to go through the criteria we need for the acutely elevated risk. And all of this ties in with provincial strategies that have formed the basis of this model since it was introduced. So since we began with our first Situation Table meeting in December of 2015 up to the end of 2019, we've had 221 referrals to the table. Of those, 80% met the threshold for acutely elevated risk, and 84% of those that met the threshold had that risk lowered. So this is information that the highlights from the annual report that was recently distributed. So referrals, as I mentioned, come from the agencies that are around the table. We do have some who don't consistently participate, but who are brought in to help when it's deemed appropriate. And consistently, the top referrers have been police, and I'll show you some of that information in a few minutes. The other interesting thing is that since we've started, the referral numbers have been dropping. And one of the really cool reasons for that is the fact that we're bringing all these partners together around the table. there's a much greater understanding of who does what and how things work and who's involved. So it's a lot easier for people to call up an agency and say, hey, you know that program that you've talked about, do you think that would work for a client who's experiencing problem X or whatever? So that the networking factor and the communication between the individuals at the table around what everyone's doing has been amazing. We've also found that consistently mental health agencies have led or assisted in approximately 40%, almost half of the situations that have come to the table since we started. We also use a risk tracking database. It's a provincial database that we have had specific training on. It keeps track of the risk factors and some of the basic demographic information, but is privacy protected as well. And in that database, we're able to track the risk factors and the agencies that are involved with the referrals that come in, so we can see what services are most prevalent and what is needed. And we found that in this time period, mental health, criminal involvement, antisocial behavior, and drugs are the top four risk categories for those discussions that have come. But there's lots of others. There's, I think, 107, I think, risk factors that are in the database. The other thing that we can track that has a bit of a sort of a local perspective, that it hits a lot of the issues that we have found in our rural communities, are study flags. And these aren't necessary in the referrals, but they just give us a way to kind of keep track of things. And not surprisingly, homelessness, housing and unsafe living conditions are in there. Domestic violence and transportation issues are there. We also were successful in getting certain factors like our study flags, like social isolation and geographic isolation, identified for rural communities. But the recent escalation is one of the primary study flags that we find, mostly because if police are our most frequent referrers, if someone is continually accessing police services, that's a tip-off often that maybe they need some assistance beyond what the police can offer. So the whole beauty of the situation table is trying to connect people to services that are most appropriate for what they need. Since we started, the OPP have kept track of calls for service related to individuals who they have referred to the table. So they've looked at how many calls for service there might be for people before they are referred, and then for a 12-month period after. And consistently, those numbers, there are blips here and there for certain individuals, but overall, the number of officer hours dedicated to those who have been referred and the number of calls for service after a referral has continued to decline. This slide just shows the agencies that are currently involved with the situation table. We have a wide spectrum of services, from mental health, general health, children's services. The paramedics are able to be there as part of the community paramedic program. Police, of course, the health unit, and school boards are involved as well. So really good cross-section of individuals. This chart shows, it's an engagement report from the beginning and until the end of June of 2020. And this is the top 10 agencies that have been engaged. All of the agencies have been engaged in one way or another. So what this shows is the blue part of the chart is the originating agency. So that's the agency that's made the referral. And you can see that Lanark OPP are at the top. Smiths Falls Police are high up there as well. They're further down in the chart, smaller service. But so police continue to be the top referrers. And then the yellowish-orange bar represents agencies that take the lead. So when someone fits the criteria and there's an intervention, we choose a lead agency and assisting agencies, because it's a multi-agency response. So the lead agency, it tends to be one that has a good rapport with the individual or who is expected to probably need the most contact with that person. So Lanark County Mental Health and Addiction Services and Victim Services and Probation are high up there in terms of leads over this time period. And you can see that many of those have been involved in assisting as well. And this just, I already mentioned what the top risk categories were, but you can see there from the bars, this goes, I apologize, there's a typo, that should be August 31st of 2020. So this represents the whole time period up to the end of then for the risk factors. And there's quite a range. We've got elder abuse, basic needs, housing is in there as well, beyond those top four that I mentioned. So this transitions well into talking about the community plan for safety and well-being, because through the situation table process, we were able to get a picture of the kinds of major risk factors that we were seeing in the community that were coming for our vulnerable populations and those who are in crisis. So it kind of helped us to identify some gaps that existed in services. In general, for the province, as you are likely aware, the Police Services Act was amended to mandate that municipalities create a community plan for safety and well-being. The act came into force last January, and everyone was supposed to have their plans ready by January 1st, 2021. This has been postponed because of COVID. The act has outlines the requirements for who needs to be on the advisory committee and the nature of the consultation that needs to take place, and the fact that the plan has to include those priority risk areas and identify how you're going to measure and deal with those things or what goals you're setting. So Lanark County and Smiths Falls is way ahead of the curve on this. Because we started with this as part of the pilot project, we saw the connection right away between what the situation table could do and how it could tie into the community safety planning. And there was a lot of information already prepared by the province to sort of help municipalities that wanted to take that path. So we started it before we were actually told we had to. We established the advisory committee in 2016, worked on the outline and consultations for the next year and a half or so. And one of the magical things about the plan is that it doesn't reinvent the wheel. We're able to take a look. It's a really important part of the plan to identify what's already working and what assets already exist and build on those things. And it really helps when you have such a great team that is collaborating to be able to share that information as well. The advisory committee approved the plan in July of 2018. It went to county council for approval in principle that same summer, but because of how it was set up and because of the way the legislation was coming out, we had to take it back to all of the local municipalities for adoption. So it's been adopted currently by 8 municipalities and Smiths Falls in the county. This slide outlines the advisory committee, the sectors that are represented. We are working on some youth representation because we had a vacancy, so we have a plan in place to move that forward. But all of the sectors that we're supposed to have are represented. So the plan, which you are hopefully somewhat or sort of familiar with, it does include 12 priority risk areas. It has an overview for each risk area, like why we establish that as a risk, as well as the assets that are associated with it. We've looked at issues identified in each risk area and provided background on that, and then developed kind of a work plan through our actions that relate to social development, prevention, risk intervention, and emergency response. So it's a living document. I'm working on a progress report with the advisory committee that I expect to be releasing early in the new year. And then we're going to revisit the whole plan starting later in 2021 and 2022, especially in light of COVID. This will be an important step. This is an overview of the risk areas that were identified, and I want to draw your attention to the last one there, and it's not in any particular order, but culture and diversity is one of the risk areas in the plan, and I know that this is an important consideration for Mississippi Mills with things that have been happening in your community. So I think it's important to let you know that we do have a working group established that is working to identify some education and training activities for the community, for law enforcement, and we're really trying to reach out to young people as well about culture and diversity. So we do have plans underway, and I'll definitely keep everybody up to speed on that as part of the progress report and ongoing activities. And I'd be happy to come back and speak with some of the partners on that, specifically about that, if you would like. So just some other kind of cool things that are happening that are related to the collaborative approach. This is one you probably are aware of as well, the mental health nurse program with police. It's now called the Mobile Crisis Response Team. So we found right from the get-go that one of the next logical steps was because of the number of people who were encountering mental health issues when they were in contact with the police, it seemed like the next logical step would be to try to connect them to services sooner. So we applied for another Proceeds of Crime grant and were successful, began a pilot project in the summer of 2018. It was a two-year project, and it just ended in March of 2020. Sorry, time flies. And it's a partnership between Lanark County OPP and Lanark County Mental Health. So mental health nurses have been embedded at the detachment, and there's also nurses with the Smiths Falls Police Service as well. And the idea was to provide the most appropriate and helpful community-based crisis service intervention at the right time in the right places. So right in with those first contacts with police. Some of the results from this have included that fewer people have been taken to emergency departments, which means less strain on resources and less time at the hospital for officers in some cases. There's a drop in the number of referrals to the situation table that seems to be linked to this, because we're helping people farther upstream. We're helping them before they're in that mental health crisis that necessitates a referral by the police to the situation table as well. So we work in conjunction, the nurses are represented at the table as well. There's been a decline in voluntary and involuntary apprehensions for mental health. And of about 500 people who were referred to the program, almost half had no prior contact with Lanark County Mental Health. So here we're getting people connected to services that weren't connected before, which is really great. Some of the unintended consequences, it has provided supports for officers and crisis response staff to de-escalate situations, engage in care planning, and facilitate appropriate referrals to various services early on. Those were intended, actually, but also officer support has been helpful. And the program was enhanced over the time period of the pilot project with other funding. They're still looking at ways to maintain it at the level that it was, because the funding has changed, but hopefully there'll be more news on that soon. Another exciting project is the Victim Advocate Case Project, which is collaborative approaches to survivor engagement. So currently there are two community safety and policing grants that are available. One is Local Stream, which funds your situation table and the community safety planning coordination. The other is a provincial stream that has an emphasis on sexual assault, domestic violence, and human trafficking. So we applied for funding to have a part-time victim advocate position that basically takes a rural-focused approach to community safety and helps to improve responses with victims and awareness of sexual violence and harassment and human trafficking. So it helps to navigate the whole justice system from the moment of the complaint through to the court system. And this was developed based on survivor feedback through forums that were held in conjunction with Lanark County Interval House, and feedback from survivors on what worked well and what didn't work at all as part of the process. So we have this funding up to March 31st, 2022. It's a collaboration between Lanark County OPP and Lanark County Interval House. The position, it's Brianne Luksavich from Interval House who is serving in that part-time capacity as part of this. And other components of the project include a training video and curriculum for police that's currently being worked on, as well as survivor engagement and other training activities for community agencies. So it's pretty awesome too. Through my role in the coordination piece, I'm involved in a number of partnerships and committees, and I'm frequently called upon to help with other communities in terms of some of their responses as well. So one of the other neat projects in Lanark County that I've been involved with from a committee perspective is the Lanark County Child and Youth Advocacy Center. So this has been open for about a year. It's in Carleton Place, and it's an actual physical center that helps to provide a wraparound response to child and youth victims of or witnesses to sexual and physical abuse. So it brings all of those services, police, family and children's services, victim services, and Interval House, and the hospitals together to help support children and youth who experience these things. So I don't have any statistics with me on this currently, but it's just another exciting collaborative tool that we have access to in the county. No doubt you've heard of Planet Youth Lanark County. The steering committee is community-led with school boards, public health, children's mental health, United Way, youth organizations, police services board, and municipal drug strategy. This project was just in its infancy in Lanark County. It was just being talked about when we were starting to work on the community safety and well-being plan, but it is incorporated into the plan, and I'm in contact with the Planet Youth Steering Committee so that as they get rolling and we learn more, hopefully some of the exciting things that they plan to do can be incorporated into that community safety planning piece. Also, just quickly on vital signs, as you know, or you may remember, the Perth and District Community Foundation was involved with releasing the vital signs report for the county in 2017. It's a project that's spearheaded through Community Foundations of Canada. And because some of the work overlaps with the Community Safety and Wellbeing Plan, we're trying to work together on some collaboration around data sharing. They have access to some wonderful data that we're hoping to share, and then the community safety planning piece would be to move some of those actions forward based on the findings. Other committees that I'm involved with include the Child and Youth Services Collaborative. There's the Successful Aging Advisory Committee that's through the United Way. The Community Pandemic Response, which I'm going to speak to in a moment. There's the Self-Isolation Center Committee, the Sexual Assault Domestic Violence Advisory. I sit with a community of practice for the province that talks about best practices for situation tables, Human Services Justice Coordinating Committee, and there's the Legal Clinic had a justice and mental health rural outreach project to try to help with connections for between mental health and legal services that was wrapping up, and they've applied for more funding as well. And just to tie in, all of these things have shown us that Lanark County has some really wonderful collaborations that are ongoing, and we work really well together, our agencies coming together. So we were in the process of working on a community crisis response plan that basically is a step down from what happens when there's a declared state of emergency. So it would be a response to critical incidents, but more from a community level. As an example might be, there were a number of murders in Eastern Ontario related to domestic violence. So in a community, in a neighborhood, how can specific agencies come together to help support people who are adversely affected by these things? How can they work together to help a community mend and get connected to services that they might need? And a really practical example that's current is the pandemic response. And we do not have a formal community crisis response plan prepared at this point. We were working on it when this happened, but naturally someone just said, hey, I think we should get a group of us together. And immediately, you know, a couple dozen agencies just started meeting on a regular basis to figure out who could do what, how could we support seniors who are isolated, how could we get groceries to people and sort of coordinate that kind of response. So that's the kind of thing that's happening. This slide just outlines some of the training that we've done and that is upcoming. We've got trauma-informed care. We've done blanket exercises for Indigenous Truth and Reconciliation. We have more planned, hopefully, when we can gather a little more safely. anti-oppression, anti-racism training has been done, and we're looking at other options coming up. Love Bomb is related to human trafficking. It's a show that we had to defer because of the pandemic, but we're hoping they'll be able to come next year. The domestic violence focus groups and survivor forums are ongoing. Lanark County has been looked to by other communities to help with their community safety planning process. And something I just wanted to highlight too, I was invited to go to Regina just before the lockdown in March to present on Lanark County's journey in terms of collaboration and the projects that we're doing, similar to what I've outlined tonight, just to show you that we're recognized nationally as leaders in terms of community safety and well-being planning and the situation tables. So we have some really good stuff here. There's lots of great tools, and it just shows that everywhere people are wanting to do the same thing and work together to make these healthy communities. So I told you I could go on and on. Almost done though. So some of our success stories include those reduced loads on emergency services that I highlighted. We've had some specific referrals to the situation table around addresses where there have been multiple problems, like apartment buildings, that we've been able to help mitigate. We had a response to increasing communication and supports around the opioid crisis that came with the situation table. We're working on a non-acutely elevated risk process, or we have developed one, where people are brought to the table with consent to get that multi-agency response. Just another way to reach people further upstream. I can't stress enough that we have excellent engagement. We have a continued desire to collaborate and help people even earlier than they are. We have wonderful community assets that are always striving to be efficient and work together. And one of my favorite things in terms of networking is when someone calls and says, okay, I have an idea, what if, and then throw it out there, and it's, you know, something that we can work on and build towards. So we're still moving forward. We're always looking to make things better. And I sincerely believe that in Lanark County, we are on the right track in terms of some of these collaborative responses and the things that we can do to help our most vulnerable people. That is it. Barring any questions, and I put the link there for the community safety and well-being plan that's on your website. So if you want to look at some more detail there, it's there for you.
Thanks so much, Stephanie. I think we have a lot to be very very proud of in the programs and the very progressive resources that Lanark County have in place. And really, we were early adopters to a lot of these pieces. So I appreciate the work that you do, and I appreciate you giving us such a good overview of all of these different programs and collaborations that are occurring in Lanark County. So thank you for that. And I'll just go to council and see if there's any questions or any comments for Stephanie. Councillor Maiden.
Thank you, Stephanie. It's Councillor Maiden. I'm wondering if you've noticed any change in the statistics related to COVID as far as, you know, mental health outcomes or anything. Have you seen the start of any changes? Thank you.
It's hard to get a real flavor of it just yet. A couple of things that are notable is that while we still have about the same number of referrals as we had this time last year, we really don't have very many young people being referred. And that's a sign of, now that may change now that school's been in place, but the fact that a lot of referrals came to us from school boards or children's mental health related agencies who had their eyes on people while we've been locked down and while kids have been out of school, we haven't really been able to see that. At the first, I would say we also have seen a little bit more in terms of social isolation and a little bit more for people who were having trouble meeting their own basic needs. I'll have a much better idea over the next few months of how that looks, but those are some of the preliminary things, and it's definitely something we want to watch for in case we end up, you know, if things get worse before they get better.
Thank you.
Other comments or questions? Councillor Ferguson.
Yes, thank you, Stephanie, for putting Lanark County on the map. And I just wonder what you're doing in your spare time.
A part-time position. So.
However, in reference to page 59, I have a question specifically to the community safety and well-being plan. And your first bullet, the last sentence of it, can be a joint plan with surrounding municipalities. Are you seeing now that, you know, being at the pulse of this, are you seeing municipalities getting together as well to come up with a plan? Because as you can appreciate, individual municipalities can be extended fairly extensively and can be expensive. Do you see any reason that you can't have joint plans within municipalities?
So under the current legislation, you could, as Mississippi Mills, do your very own plan, and you would have to fund it and sort that out yourself. And what we did, because we did it the way we did, we just kind of forged ahead and assumed it would be a regional plan because it wasn't mandated at that point. So we did it as a Lanark County plan and then brought it back to the municipality. So everybody's adopting the same plan. And I think from what I've seen provincially, for the most part, it's being done regionally. So whatever works, whether it's through LIN boundaries or municipal boundaries or however it makes the most sense in terms of service provision and the agencies that are involved, that's the kind of thing that we're seeing. So if, you know, if we move forward with the next updated version of the plan in 2022 or whatever, probably, depending on how things go, it would make sense to go to county council and say, do you want to proceed with this as a Lanark County plan? And then just have it come back to county council and adopt it. That would be one way that it could be done. But does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. And I guess, again, you know, you being in the forefront of this, are you seeing this happening at that level? Because, again, the regulations, as you're well aware, from the Police Service Act have not been approved. But do you see them including something like that in the regulations in prior to approval?
Yes. So I'm working with a partner to help them develop their community safety and well-being plan. It's for Prescott Russell, and that's what they did. They took it to county council and adopted it, or passed a motion authorizing the plan to be developed for Prescott Russell. So it will still involve consultation with all the local municipalities, but the plan would be adopted by the counties, and that would be that.
Good. Thank you for that. I think that's a positive way forward. And just a quick comment in reference to mental health, and of interest, I guess, is yesterday the Quebec government announced $100 million specifically to mental health, which is now coming to the forefront, as you're well aware. So that's an interesting movement, I think, there, and I assume that the same will happen in Ontario as well.
That would be nice.
Thanks again.
Deputy, you're very welcome.
Deputy Mayor Minnelli.
Thank you, Stephanie. When it comes to the most vulnerable in Lanark County, thank you for the help. I'm just wondering, I don't know if it's a question or when it comes to first response, it's when you showed that graph up there, it was the police always was the first response with everything. Is there ever going to come a time where you'd be able to send out mental health officers? And does privacy issues interfere with that kind of collaboration with police and mental health people?
So I missed part of the question. Did you ask if mental health nurses would be going out with police officers and whether there are privacy concerns?
Whether they'd ever be first point of contact without the police.
Yeah, so the way it basically works right now, and I would want to verify the finer points of the details with the OPP, but currently, if a call comes in and there is known mental health issues already, the mental health nurse can respond with the officer
currently. So the officer goes to make sure that the scene is safe, and then there's that collaboration where they can work jointly to make sure that the person is connected to mental health or whatever service that they need to go to the hospital or whatever service that they need. So they're already working in collaboration.
But won't be first connection because of other issues, right? Like, I'm wondering, if it was a domestic dispute, would there still be two police officers sent with a mental health person?
I think it really depends on the nature of the call. So if there's a definite identified mental health issue, that's when the mental health nurse would be involved. If it was more of a domestic violence issue, that's where the victim advocate can be involved. The victim advocate wouldn't go with the police, but the individual, the victim, would then be referred to the victim advocate for support and follow-up, along with, in collaboration with victim services and the hospital and whoever else needs to be engaged.
And my second part of the question was, does privacy issues ever get in between help and the collaboration between the two groups?
So privacy is at the forefront of all of this. Every agency that is working in collaboration has its own strict privacy guidelines related to the provincial and federal legislation. So they certainly take all of that into account, and it's the same at the situation table. We work in a de-identified format. The situation table does not keep any personal records. Any agency that has a case management mandate can then get consent from the individuals who are involved to proceed. And there is some latitude if a person is in crisis and they're deemed at acutely elevated risk. There is some latitude within the legislation to be able to give very minimal information in order to allow for that engagement with the services.
Okay, thank you.
Were there any other questions or comments for Stephanie? Okay, seeing not, thank you. Oh, sorry, am I getting away from you there, Councillor?
Yeah.
Okay, go right ahead, Councillor Delgatty.
Just a quick one.
Sure.
I'm looking at your charred risk categories, 2015 August to 20, I think you said 2020. Can you just explain the difference, Andy, social and mental health? The differences on your chart, antisocial and mental health as risk categories?
So antisocial behavior, sometimes they go hand in hand. Some of the risk factors, are very similar. There's a little bit of overlap. The antisocial behavior tends to be more around how the person who's being referred is interacting with others. And it may be because of a mental health issue, or it may not be. So the antisocial behavior is just like if there's a neighbor dispute or a person is constantly getting into fights, or there's lots of different examples, but usually things that are making it difficult to engage with the person.
Thank you.
Any last comments or questions? Okay, seeing none, I'm not sure if you hear me well or not, Stephanie, or if not, Jen could pass us along. But thank you very much for your time and for your expertise and your dedication to the most vulnerable here in our wider community of Lanark County.
Well, thank you for having me. And again, I really want to thank the partners that we have around the table, including the municipalities and the police services boards, for having the vision to move this forward. And I'm constantly inspired by the people around the table who work so hard. All I do is call the meetings, so it's really everybody else who's doing the legwork. So, but thank you.
All right, thanks so much, Stephanie. So with that, we do have a motion here. I'm going to change it slightly, if you would indulge me, just to capture the fulsome nature of the delegation we've heard from Stephanie.
So I'm going to recommend that the delegation by Stephanie Gray, coordinator of the Lanark County Situation Table, reviewing the Lanark County Situation Table, the Community Safety and Well-Being Plan, the Mobile Crisis Response Team, Victim Advocate Project, and a review of the collaborative partnerships in Lanark County be received for information. Is there a mover and seconder for that? Councillor Dalgety? Councillor Ferguson? Anything further? Seeing not, all in favor? Thank you, and that carries. And we've been going for almost 3 hours, so I'm going to suggest we take a quick 5 minutes. You can stretch your legs and perk up a little bit. We have a lot to do yet, so let's come back in about 5 minutes, and we'll continue this meeting. All right, so I'm going to call the meeting back to order. We have a lot of meeting left to do here, so I ask for your focus and your attention. So we're moving on to the Committee of the Whole report. This is Section L of the agenda. There are 6 items in the Committee of the Whole report. Would anyone wish to pull one of these items for separate vote or discussion? Seeing not, is there a mover and seconder for the Committee of the Whole report? Councillor Ferguson? Councillor Dalgety? All in favor? Thank you. And that brings us to our 2 bylaws. One is for the zoning bylaw amendment for 191 Waba, and the other is an encroachment agreement for 56 John Street. Would anyone like to discuss either bylaw separately or have a separate vote? Okay, seeing not, is there a mover and seconder for the 2 bylaws? Councillor Holmes, Councillor Girard, all in favor? Thank you, that carries. And announcements and invitations. Anything anyone might like to speak to? Councillor Maiden?
Just wanted to announce thank you to Councillor Dalgety for doing all the work on behalf of the Legion in advance of Remembrance Day. A lot of new photographs have been unearthed and put up on their website. Thanks in big part to him and I guess other volunteers at the Legion. And Councillor Dalgety and I would like to invite members of the public, council, because we cannot attend a Remembrance Day service in person this year, to consider making a donation to your local Legion or the Poppy Fund. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Maiden. Any other announcements or invitations? Councillor Dalgety.
I'll just add on that a little bit. There's lots of questions out there about Remembrance Day and what the Legion's doing. Over the next day or two, there'll be an announcement on the Branch 240 website as well as their Facebook page for the agenda. A lot of it's going to be virtual. There'll be streaming involved. And as Councillor Maiden mentioned, there's a lot of pictures going up. And I understand from Councillor Ferguson, Pakenham is also doing the same thing with pictures and just doing the best we can under the circumstances.
Thanks for that. And Councillor Ferguson, did you wish to highlight what's happening in Pakenham for Remembrance Day?
Yes, and again, I guess with Councillor Dalgety, that the fact that it will be up on our website. I believe Tiffany's working on a press release, is that correct?
I think she's just waiting for additional information.
Confirmation.
As Councillor Dalgety had mentioned. But.
Yes, and Pakenham's will be up on YouTube not until 10:45 on the 11th. But it will be then running for, you know, from there on in. And it's been put together by 3 or 4 people within Pakenham, but very specifically to Andre McFarlane, a previous resident. And it's really addressing all of the individuals and that are on the cenotaph, and also a vivid description of where they're buried and everything. And it's very, very, very well done and pretty heartwarming.
Thank you, and look forward to being able to remember, even though it'll be a different way this year. I appreciate the effort that's going into to make these alternatives available to us. If there's no other announcements and invitations, I will look for a mover and seconder to move back into camera, and this is to discuss items B3 and B4 from the closed session portion of the agenda that we had not discussed at the beginning of the meeting. So B3 is regarding 28 Mill Street, and the reason for going into camera is because of a proposed or pending acquisition or disposition of land by the municipality or local board. And item B4 is regarding the cost-sharing agreement. The reason for moving into camera is that position plan procedure criteria or instruction to be applied to any negotiations carried on or to be carried on by or on behalf of the municipality or local board. So I'm looking for a mover and seconder to move into camera to discuss those two items. Councillor Girard and Deputy Mayor Minnelli, all in favor? Thank you. We're in camera. Okay. So we've called the meeting back to into open session. There were two items that we discussed in closed session. Item B3 regarding a proposed or pending acquisition or disposition of land by the municipality or local board. And on this item, direction was provided to staff. And on item B4, a position plan, procedure, criteria, or instruction to be applied to any negotiations carried on or to be carried on by or on behalf of the municipality or local board. And on this item, direction was also provided to staff. So that's the rise and report. And I'm looking for a mover and seconder for the confirmatory bylaw. Councilor Ferguson, Councilor Dalgety, all in favor? Thank you. And adjournment, mover and seconder for adjournment. Councillor Holmes, Deputy Mayor Minnelli, all in favor? Thank you. We're adjourned.